Well, I guess the first thing I have to ask you, Ali, is given the enormous amount of literature that has been written, both factual and in novel form, about Jeanne d'Arc, why you felt attracted to this story and wanted to present it in a different way?
That's a good question. I guess I'm a bit sort of pretentious, and I think that I could have, I thought I could maybe do a better job. There's a lot of good versions of her story. I think there's a terrific movie, a 1927 silent film, The Passion of Jeanne d'Arc, which is brilliant. Some really great paintings, excellent sculptures. But I don't think that, I don't think writers have done a very good job of it. You know, I mean, Shakespeare famously, his depiction of her is so dreadful that Shakespearean scholars believe Shakespeare himself didn't write it. You know, Voltaire's epic poem about her is so frivolous and you know, forgettable. So I was kind of encouraged by that sort of possibility of seeing if I could take on this challenge. But I'm also, you know, deeply interested in her and in some ways, you know, fascinated by her. I feel very close to her personally. So it was kind of natural for me to want to do it. I've been reading and researching about her all my life.
Well, that occurred to me that one of the problems with the research is the enormous amount that's been written and sorting out the actual, you know, fiction from the fact. Yes. Because so much of what was written from the English side was sheer prejudice about her because she was French, and so much that was written from the French side was prejudice because she was a woman. So, you know, how did you wade through all this?
Yeah, interesting. The question of gender was interesting. Her side in the war, the French Valois side, yes, they realized that they would be up to, you know, against this kind of sexist prejudice. But from the very beginning, during her own life, the main theologian, Jean Garçon, he actually wrote a tract defending her and saying, look, it's okay. We can let this one go. For once, we can actually let a woman lead our armies because she was winning victories. So at this moment, and it happens, you know, this is how little sort of breaks are made in history. Something exceptional does happen. So I think in terms of her gender, she gets it. She doesn't have a particularly hard time from her own side. Her enemies have different views, but they are more than anything afraid of her. The English see her as a witch. That's how Shakespeare depicts her. For a long time, they're terrified of her. I mean, that's interesting too. They're not, you know, so much dismissive of her as they're terrified of her. And her own side, the problem, I think, of the traditional French view is that they see her as a saint. They worship her. So, you know, there's that sort of dichotomy, which is in many ways the gender dichotomy between being worshipped and being hated. You know, it seems like that sort of seems to be the problem with that. And I think, yeah, that's an issue for the scholar. I think, you know, with her, we're lucky to have access to primary sources. She's very unique like that for a figure of early history to have so much existing primary documents, which are the records of her trials. They were kept. The English and their allies who put her on trial wanted to make sure that it's a legitimate trial. They had the records written in Old French and in Latin for the Pope. They wanted the Pope to see that this was a legitimate, correct, you know, fair trial. And I have to say, for the standards of the time, insofar as any inquisitional trial could be fair, this was a very fair trial. They followed procedures. She was received. The questions were thorough, and ultimately they could not pin her for witchcraft or even heresy. The best they could do was get her accept that she had presumed too much and she may have committed a less severe sin of idolatry, and the punishment for that wasn't burning anyway. It was, she had to take off her male clothes. That was a big issue. So that there's question of gender in there for sure, but the question was more about, you know, the fact that she's wearing masculine clothes, and that was considered to be a problem, a transgression. And more importantly, perhaps, the fact that she claimed to be hearing voices. And they said, that's sacrilege, that's blasphemy. And that's would be, when she signed a document saying, I made it up, I wasn't hearing voices, and I'm prepared to take off my trousers, then that was it. She got life imprisonment and not the execution that the English wanted.
So how do we view this with 21st century eyes now in terms of, you know, the things that were recorded there, the hearing of the voices? You know, we don't believe she was a witch, you know, we probably don't believe she was a saint. But did you think perhaps she was just, a slightly disturbed young woman at a particular point in history? So people found her inspirational. Yeah. She was obviously very clever if we read the court transcripts, wasn't she? She was not unintelligent.
Oh, she was very smart. I mean, she's got a sort of, she's also very assertive too, you know, like it's quite amazing that she sort of doesn't resile from arguing against her much more powerful social betters. You know, she's just really amazing. She's got a lot of attitude. Look, I don't know. I mean, I accept her voices, not because I've heard any voices myself. I mean, I'm a materialist, so I don't, you know, I don't believe in angels and so on, but I accept that she sincerely believed that she heard voices. I personally don't think there were quote-unquote real voices that would reverberate her eardrums. I don't believe that was her experience. I think she was speaking in a way that today we would call figurative, but at the time in late Middle Ages was not considered to be figurative. A lot of people were hearing voices at that time. A lot of people were having visions. A little bit like me today saying, look, I had a vision of, I don't know, my future. You wouldn't ask me and say, did you actually see it? Did you physically see physical objects to do with your future? And you say, well, no, but I actually can project something of my present condition into an imaginary of the future, something like that. I think that's what her experience was. But in my book, I have fully, you know, have her hearing voices, because that's what she thought. She sincerely believed that she was being spoken to by agents from God. And I'm happy for that to be the case in my story. There are, you know, actual voices in this story.